RIR Studios. This is The Defenders Live with our very own Miss Anna Edwards. Let's hear what Miss Anna has to say. Anna, take it away.
You're talking so sweet, well, you needn't. You say you won't cheat, well, you needn't. You're tapping your feet, well, you needn't. It's over now, it's over now.
And good afternoon, Richmond. You are listening to The Defenders Live, and I am your host, Anna Edwards, and today is Monday. And the first thing we want to do is give a shout out to all of you for supporting WRAR and helping us reach our $35,000 goal for this, our Spring 2012 Fund Drive. From the bottom of The Defenders Live heart, we thank you. And today we have a really good program for you. I'm going to go through a few sort of calendar items and things to remind you of that are coming up. But we are going to have with us two of the young women who were part of the March 3rd demonstration against the repressive legislation that is coming through our Virginia General Assembly, and that some of it, which in fact has gone through our General Assembly. So we will be talking to two young women who were there. I have with me my co-host today, Tiamba Wilkerson.
Good afternoon, Richmond.
All right. And just to remind you that The Defenders is brought to you as a production of The Defenders for Freedom, Justice, and Equality. And if you would like to learn more, visit our website at defendersfje.org and defendersfje.blogspot.com. If you want to give us a call, it's 804-644-5834. Or if you want to send us an email, it's defendersfje@hotmail.com. All right. Well, the first thing I'll tell you is that the Virginia Defender newspaper is out. The spring issue has just started hitting the streets over the weekend, and the big headline is Stop the War Against Iran and Stop the Phony War on Drugs at Home. So you can pick those up all over town. You can pick them up here at WRAR. You can pick them up at libraries and community centers all over Richmond, and it's distributed to 16,000 all over the state and even outside of the state. So this is a statewide newspaper focusing on both local and international issues. So please check it out. Some of the stories that are featured deal with the Virginia People's Assembly that had over 170 people attend its fourth annual production back in January. And we point to the upcoming United National Anti-War Coalition Conference in March from the 23rd to the 25th in Stamford, Connecticut. And for those of you who have been following the story of Mumia Abu-Jamal, he is off death row. And there is still a struggle to free him entirely. And if there is a story covering that, because there will be a protest regarding that issue on April 24th in Washington, D.C. There's a lot going on. Coverage on the Slave Trail Commission, on the plans for the burial ground. There's an interesting exhibit at the Science Museum, a story about that. But I want to bring us back right now to the issue at hand, which is, you know, there are two issues that sort of come up as a result. One is the fact that our women's rights advocates did, in fact, brave arrests at the state capitol building. And here to talk about it are two young women who I'm going to let introduce themselves. Cameron.
My name is Cameron Coleman.
And are you affiliated with any organization, or are you were you just an independent woman standing up there for your rights?
I guess I was there as an individual.
As an individual. All right. And?
Hi, my name is Shelley Abrams.
All right. And same for you. Individual woman called to?
A little bit of both. I'm actually an abortion provider. I run a local women's clinic here.
You
in
do?
Richmond. Yes.
Okay. Well, this is good because this is... Obviously, this is a long-standing issue, and I think one of the things that that gets frustrating if you follow it, if you participate in it, is the way in which rhetoric begins to rule the day. And rhetoric certainly creates dynamics that are just aside the point. whenever I talk to people about it, whenever I think about it, whenever we've talked about it here on the show, it comes down to the ability for women to have some control over their own body.
Mm-hmm.
And the way in which our legislators, for as much as we hear people screaming they want big government out of our private lives, here's a classic example of wanting to shove it right on in to our lives, so to speak. And so I'm really pleased that you all were willing to come down, considering the experience that you had. If you'd like, you know, Cameron, why don't you start and talk about why you were there, and then we'll talk about what happened.
I don't know. I guess I was there because this is something that's really important to me. I personally don't ever want to have children, and I would like to be able to have a tubal ligation at some point in my life, but right now, in Virginia, there's no way that anyone would ever perform that procedure for me. Like, there are no doctors who will do that on someone who's 19 years old. And so, for me, right now, like, in the event, you know, hopefully this never happens, but in the event that I have an unwanted pregnancy, I don't ever, ever want to have children of my own. And that's my personal choice.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now that's, okay, that all just jumped into another issue, which I had not actually heard anyone talk about before, which is the voluntary desire to, mm-hmm. you know, eliminate the possibility of becoming pregnant. I mean, we talk about birth control,
yeah.
you know, and we talk about procedures for sterilization that people are victims of, and that come as a result of a health concern or an injury or that kind of thing. But not very often do you hear women who will talk about the fact that they don't want to have children and then how you go about ensuring that that doesn't happen. So that's a very interesting aspect of this as well. And so as an abortion provider, it sounds like as you nod over there, you're very aware of what's legal, what's not legal, and what's the world that you occupy?
Well, currently the world I occupy for me is very scary. I've been working in clinics for about 15 years now, and it used to be that we were afraid of individuals taking away our rights when they shot doctors, when they bombed our clinics. It was always a person, and we would get briefings on how we could assure our safety and defend ourselves, and that gave us a little bit of protection, we felt like. But when your own government starts to take away your rights, there's feels like literally nothing you can do. And that's how I've been feeling for the past year here in Virginia. Like, our right to abortion access is being stripped away from us by our own government. And what do you do when that happens?
Right. So. Talk a little bit about, you know, what it means to have the right to abortion available.
Well, for me, I'm a lot like Cameron personally, in that I don't want to have children. And I know that access to abortion is so important for maintaining some semblance of control over your life. And what I see every day, I see 19-year-olds, I see 20-year-olds, I see 46-year-olds who didn't think they could get pregnant, who've completed their family, and who just can't start over again. And then I see 19-year-olds who are in college or just beginning their life on their own, who just cannot take care of another person. And so they come in and they choose abortion. And people need to understand that 1 in 3 women by the time they're 50 will have chosen an abortion. So it's your sisters and your mothers and your best friends.
Right. So the numbers mm-hmm. are actually very high. And some people would say that might be because they can. That
right.
because they have the option, they take the option, as opposed to, you know, toughing it out and making it work.
So the idea of having children is punishment for bad behavior.
Right.
Essentially. Yeah, I don't believe in that.
Yeah. That's what I was going to ask, if you could, you know, speak to, like, you mentioned, what is the alternative then? You know, like, what kind of world do the people that, you know, support this legislation, that present the legislation, like, what kind of world do they ultimately want to see? You know, like, I personally think it's, you know, barefoot and pregnant, you know, a lot, you know, like, this is extremely, you know, this is an extremely reactionary period that we're living through, not just in terms of women's reproduction, but, you know, for workers, for, you know, immigrants, just in general. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of this is to counteract a lot of the gains that women made, you know, during the feminist movement, the Black feminist movement, Latino feminist movement. And, you know, it's, we have to, you know, kind of put, where was I going with this? You know, like we have to be sure to remind people what the alternative is. You know,
so what is your vision?
Well, I think Rick Santorum probably embodies right. his, the vision of what right. These folks who are trying to pass all these laws want to see. They want to outlaw prenatal testing, which might lead to an abortion. So you have not only women suffering, but you have children suffering, children that might be born, you know, with horrible medical conditions. They may only suffer for a few years, but it's needless suffering. And they want, again, they want to see a situation where they know what's best for us and they can tell us what's best for us. Mm-hmm. And that scares me.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about what happened on Saturday, March 3rd. You all were at the demonstration, and I understand that there was, you were gathered on the steps. There was a permit to gather at the bell tower, but then there was a sort of a sit-in aspect of the demonstration on the Capitol steps, and you were both there. And why don't you, Cameron, why don't you start? Tell me what happened.
I don't know. I guess from my personal perspective, I showed up with a couple friends of mine who are, you know, we've been involved with activism in Richmond for, you know, about a year, some of the younger ones of us. And, you know, we weren't really expecting much to happen that day because it wasn't something that, like, it was something that was organized by people who we sometimes, like, work in parallel with, but who in general, like, are involved with things that are a lot more, I don't know, within the realm of
mainstream?
Like, things that are a lot more mainstream. And so it was just, you know, we were kind of prepared for this to be, like, we're going to march around the sidewalks a couple times. We're all going to go home and feel good about ourselves.
Right. Right.
But then surprisingly, there was like, you know, a call out like, hey, you know, there's going to be an action possibly. So people who are more high risk should, you know, come up and find out if this is something that they want to do. And they're like, you know, so we're going to consider we're gonna try to march up to the Capitol steps. And so, you know, we marched up to the Capitol steps, and then it was like, okay, cool, we're here. And, you know, it was just kind of, things kind of just progressed, really. It wasn't ever, like, a conscious decision made by an entire group to, like, sit down and do this. It was just like, well, let's see if we can march up these stairs.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, hey, cool, we marched up the stairs. Well, I guess we can stay here for a little while. And it just kind of
right.
happened.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Mm-hmm. No one ever really was like...
spontaneous civil disobedience.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so you were there, and what happened next?
Well, they started to arrest people. I have to tell you, the first few women that they took off were very scared, and they were yelling and screaming in fear. And I remember sitting there thinking, this is really happening. They're mm-hmm. really arresting us, and they're really dragging us off of the Capitol steps. And it was a surreal experience for me. I chose to walk with the officer, and I remember walking. I was one of the first that walked, and then seeing these stormtroopers file past me kind of marching. And that was, again, part of the surreal experience of, wow, they're bringing in stormtroopers. So that's essentially what happened next.
Yeah. So you were all taken, put on these buses, and you were taken to the city lockup. And then my next understanding of it came later that night around 7 o'clock when I found out that you all had been there. Since about 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, and that the women were on one bus and the men had just finished being processed and you had your hands cuffed behind your backs, and of course the big outrage was that there was no access to a bathroom facility, and they had to set up a bucket, or they decided finally to set up a bucket in the other bus, and you got one by one led in. They didn't take the cuffs off you, and you know all of what you can imagine about having to make do. But ultimately, they didn't finish processing all the women until about midnight. What time did you all get out?
I got out around 11.
Mm-hmm. I got out around 10 p.m.
Around 10. Yeah. So can you talk about the processing? Can you talk about there's been an arraignment date, is that right? Or you had an arraignment date and your trial dates have been set?
Mine hasn't. I'm going to be arraigned on the 15th.
Okay. On April 15th?
Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry, March 15th.
Okay, so in a couple of days, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I'm being arraigned on March 16th, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. How are you feeling about this right now? I mean, you know, this, like you said, this was not something you anticipated. Being arrested is a great unknown. Your first time, of course, if it will only be your first time, and only time. it is an unknown. I think that's a big deal. How are you feeling about it now?
Well, I don't know. I have several friends who've been arrested, like involved with civil disobedience or like marches or protests, and so for me, it was somewhat easier just to have that like experience by proxy, like people having said, okay, this is what happened to me, and it was really scary, but in case it ever happens to you, this is what you need to know. Mm-hmm. And also to have like so many other people with me, just like, I don't know, it was a lot easier, I feel like, that way than being arrested as an individual.
Right.
But I don't know, I know that a lot of, you know, the women who are arrested with me are having like essentially like PTSD, like they're anxious all the time and they're scared, they feel like they're being watched. Mm-hmm. Because I don't know. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a goody two-shoes myself, so I really never envisioned this for myself. I was not expecting to have my hands tied behind my back for 8 hours. I really expected to be treated more humanely than I was. So, yeah, there's certainly some trauma associated with that, mm-hmm. but at the same time, I've met, you know, 29 other really courageous, wonderful people that I didn't think were out there as an abortion provider. I felt so alone, and I don't feel alone anymore, which is good.
Yeah, no, that solidarity is very important.
Right.
Do you all feel like the police punished you all in a way? You know, the fact that, like Anna said earlier, they processed the men first and released the men first and made you all wait, you know, on the bus under those conditions. You know, do you feel like they were, you know, trying to make an example out of you all and punish you all for, you know, resisting?
Did they say things like that? I mean, did you ever get anything directly? Did they, you know... I mean, obviously, yeah. I certainly agree with that. I mean, it seemed odd to me that they would process the men first and then the women slowly drag that out. That's very, you know, that's very clear mm-hmm. messaging.
Yeah, I know. We got a lot of, like, when people asked for water or food or said that they need to go to the bathroom, there was definitely a lot of, well, this is what you get. Like, you got yourselves into this situation, sort of right. like, mm-hmm. this is what you deserve because of the choices that you've made. Which, from what I hear, is not uncommon for anyone who's arrested, is that, like, essentially, you deserved it.
Right.
It's your fault.
Yeah.
And also, yeah, if they didn't like the way we were behaving, they would, like, there were people, obviously, standing outside cheering for us. And so if we, like, got loud enough in hopes that they would be able to hear us cheer back, the driver came on and would cut off the air conditioning, you know, to punish us for being loud.
Right, right.
And, wow. you know, things like that.
It definitely felt like we had been bad little girls and mm-hmm. that it wasn't going to be, they were going to make sure we regretted it.
Right. Let me take a quick moment to let people know that they're listening to The Defenders Live here on WRIR 97.3. It's LPFM radio, Richmond's radio for the rest of us. You can tune in live on Mondays from 12 to 12:30, and you can listen on the web at WRIR.org. And, of course, if you want to know more about The Defenders, please visit defendersfje.org. Give us a call at 644-5834 and send us an email at defenders. defendersfje.org. Thanking every one of my listeners again for tuning in and for supporting the station and helping us reach our $35,000 goal. If you haven't actually pledged yet, please go ahead and do that. You can do it online or you can give the station a call at 622-9747 and someone will happily take your pledge to help keep us on the air. We're here today with my co-host Tiamba Wilkerson, who is a member of the Defenders as well, and two of our guests, Cameron and Shelley, who experienced the March 3rd arrests of all of the women. I think there was 31 altogether who were arrested, men and women, yeah. And processed on the 3rd. Talk a little bit about the legislation that most concerns you. Maybe, I don't know if one stood out for you each or, you know, collectively or whatever, but I think it would be good to talk a little bit about that actual legislation.
Well, what started making me feel really hopeless as an abortion provider was actually a year ago when clinic regulations were passed that require us to build very, very costly buildings that are unnecessary and not in line with the very small risk that is involved with the actual procedure. So for a year, I've been feeling really discriminated against by our own government. But the HB 462 is the ultrasound bill, which has really gotten a lot of attention because it's invasive and it's unnecessary and you're mandating medical procedures which you never hear about your government doing. Right. And not only that, a lot of people don't realize that there is a 24-hour wait period involved with that where the patient has to make two trips. So that means she has to get two babysitters. Mm-hmm. She has to miss work twice. Right. She has to find two drivers from wherever she's coming from. So it's a huge burden, an invasive burden on the women of Virginia.
In addition to essentially, you know, trying to bully and shame her into carrying the pregnancy to term.
Certainly. And I think that, you see, they passed the exemption for rape and incest victims that they didn't have to have it. A mandated ultrasound. And what that means to me is that the government is happy with the amount of suffering those women have had, but they don't feel like the rest of us have had enough suffering, so therefore we should have to endure it.
Right. There is something about that independent mentality, that mentality of persevering, you know, through suffering, and if you haven't suffered enough, that you don't warrant the rewards that this country apparently has to offer.
Right,
it's pretty fascinating.
I, you know, would like to go back to the civil disobedience a bit, and you know, and some of the comments that I heard, and I was there Saturday, and just some of the comments that I heard in talking, and then you know, on Facebook and online, and people. You know, I think we mentioned this earlier, and you mentioned that in terms of the mentality of the officers, but saying that you all weakened the cause by, you know, disobeying the orders, and that, you know, we're a nation of laws and order, and, you know, by engaging in this action, you disobeyed the law, and you, like you said earlier, you deserve what you got. And so I guess my question is, you know, could you speak a little bit about the value of civil disobedience in this period of time, in, you know, in these kinds of issues? Because there is a value in engaging in this kind of action, and I don't think people really understand that sometimes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, personally, I never ever do this. I never ever go back to like the whole like founding fathers patriotism thing, because really I it kind of irritates me when people do that. But I mean, really, we're a nation of dissenters. Like, that is essentially our heritage. That is how we became a country. That's how, you know, generations and generations of like oppressed minorities in this country have like won their freedom, is dissent, because you can't appeal to the moral sensibilities of your oppressors in order to gain your freedom, like asking nicely, oh, please, Mr. Man, could I have my rights now?
Right.
That's not going to get you what you need, what you deserve.
Yeah, agreed.
It's true. Yeah. And I feel like, how do you fight a government? that is taking away your rights. Because we heard some legislators talk at a rally a couple weeks ago, and they kept saying, oh, in 2013, we're going to show them. We're going to show them. Well, we can't wait until 2013. So how do you fight a government that expects you to wait until 2013? Mm-hmm. And how do you express your outrage when no one is actually listening?
Yeah. So and then 2013 turns into 2015.
The next election. Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's one of the things that does become very frustrating, and when people say, you know, you really just, you know, we've got a good system, you just got to make it work.
Right.
But as you say, dissent has always been a part of the system, and it has always been necessary when the system has to be rearranged, right? Is that public voice. The public voice is what drives our agendas and drives our the world that we live in. It's our culture. If we don't make that culture, then we get the culture we made by not participating, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's very, yeah. I'm sorry that I've been given the cue, and we're going to have to wrap it up. But I want to thank both of you for being willing to come on the radio and talk about, you know, your situation and what this means. I think this is what it means for Virginia women.
Mm-hmm.
And for people, and you know, the truth be told, whether you support actually having an abortion or not, and what role it plays or has played in your life or the lives of women around you, this idea that it's okay to legislate more repression on our lives is at bottom more than incorrect. It is entirely wrong, and it is entirely the wrong direction to be going. And these kinds of venal victories that the right wing are looking for, it's very scary, and we really need to be paying attention to it here, but also recognize that that means that it's happening in other places as well, and we really need to be staying on task and fighting that every step of the way. So thank you both very much for coming, Shelley and Cameron.
Thank you.
All right. All right. We're wrapping up the show. I want to remind everyone that the Virginia Defender has come out. It's covered this issue and many others of importance to this idea of fighting repression and fighting oppression. I want to thank our special guest, Melinda Skinner, who sat in. And she was also at the demonstration, but she was really just here to be a part of the production team. And we had our own in-studio audience today. So I want to thank you for joining us. And thank everyone for tuning into Defenders Live. We look forward to talking to you next week, and I thank you once again for supporting the station and the show. Keep up the struggle, and remember that kindness matters. Thanks.
You're talking so sweet, well, you needn't. You say you won't cheat, well, you needn't. You're tapping your feet, well, you needn't. It's over now, it's over now.